From the Moan Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, Tracy Ellis Ross on the evolution of her role on Black-ish and how she advocates for the character she plays.
What am I, just playing ping pong right here? Just sitting in between because I got dressed and put makeup on? Like, what's my point of view in the scene? And if that's pointed out to them and it's something that hasn't been noticed, it's fixed.
And choreographer Chloe Arnold creates the insane dance routines for James Corden's Crosswalk the Musical.
In real life, though there are police there to oversee and to protect it all, it's still very real. We're not closing the street down. This is in real time.
All that coming right up.
KPCC podcast supported by National Geographic's Jane, a film by Brett Morgan that profiles legendary conservationist Jane Goodall and the most Emmy-nominated documentary of the year, called one of the best documentaries of all time by Vogue, natgotv.com/FYC. And the HBO series Curb Your Enthusiasm. The Hollywood Reporter hails it as one of TV's greatest comedies. For your Emmy consideration, nominated for 4 Emmys, including Outstanding Comedy Series.
Welcome to The Frame. I'm John Horn. Thanks for joining us. We'll start today with my conversation with Tracy Ellis Ross. She has an Emmy nomination for Outstanding Lead Actress in a Comedy for her role on Black-ish. Ellis plays Rainbow Johnson, wife, mother, and accomplished doctor. In the most recent season of Black-ish, Ross also directed an episode, and it tackled one of the show's trickiest topics, the faltering marriage her character has with her husband, played by Anthony Anderson. Black-ish creator Kenya Barris, who recently left ABC for a lucrative deal at Netflix, based the show on his own family, and Barris made serious issues such as racial bias a key component of the show. At times, ABC has seen the series as too controversial for primetime. Last season, the network canceled an episode, reportedly about Black NFL players taking a knee during the national anthem. When Ross joined me in studio, we started by talking about an episode from last season called Mother Nature, which dealt with postpartum depression, followed by our interview.
You know what might be fun?
What?
If we take this postpartum depression quiz together.
Trey, I don't want to do that. I'm okay.
Totally. Totally. But I think we should take it just in case one of us has a debilitating mood disorder. Okay? So I'll go first. Do you feel sad, hopeless, overwhelmed, empty? That's a nope for me. How about you?
I don't know. I feel sad.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel hopeless and I feel overwhelmed, but I don't feel empty, so I guess it's a no for me.
Oy.
I mean, it's really real.
Yeah.
And that feels like something that is so integral to the show that even as you're telling a joke, you are delving into tough topics.
Yeah, it's one of the things I love about our show so much, because there's a way that our comedy comes from character, from life, from actual experience, as opposed to bump-a-dump-bump, you know? And what I find really interesting, both as an actor and a watcher of our show, and postpartum, we refer to it as postpartum, that episode, because it was about postpartum, but it's called Mother Nature. And to deal with any sort of mental health, mental illness, any of that in the Black community is, I felt really proud of our show for opening up the box, especially on postpartum, in a way that you just don't see on television and you rarely see with Black families and is really important in the Black community.
Do you think the show is watched differently based on who you are, if you're Black person versus a white person? Do you think it really has something different for audiences depending yeah. on their ethnicity? And how would you define that difference?
I don't know if it's different by ethnicity, but I think it's different individually. I mean, I hear that across the board when I run into people. I have people that come up to me and say, oh my God, my mother-in-law is like, my relationship with my mother-in-law is exactly like you and Ruby. Or they come up to me and say, oh my God, I had that conversation with my son. And I think that's the mark of a really good show. And part of what is so lovely about us as a Black family being an American family, that whether you're Black or not, you are identifying with us as a family.
Kenya has talked about how for this show and for Grown-ish, he wants to populate his writer's room with people who have different perspectives. Mm-hmm. So they are challenging him,
they're offering up ideas and stories that may be unique to their backgrounds that he wants to hear about. How would you say the actors' backgrounds and perspectives affect the show itself? Because they have their own stories, they have their own views of things. Is there a way that you have a voice in all of that, or is just...
Well, I absolutely have a voice, but I have a voice in how I breathe life into Beau. But my own personal background is not a part of the story. I mean, Beau is very different from me. I think Dre is similar to Anthony. I mean, that's, you know, that's where the show kind of, the genesis of the show is between Kenya and Anthony, and seeing a gap in a story of this kind of Black man on television, and of sort of the unfolding of how you make sense of a family in this context, you know? But no, not for me. Does that answer that question?
Yeah, and knows what she's talking about. I mean, there's a little incident conversation in the past season about your character's one-year-old and about whether or not he should be walking. Your husband thinks he should be. And you're like, don't worry about it. And I know what I'm talking about.
I'm a doctor.
Yeah. It's like, I think he says, we need to see a doctor. And you say, I am a doctor.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's the running joke, is that Beau says it all the time. But I also think she says it all the time because it's ignored.
Hey, Pops, you really should get checked out.
You know what? I'm going to set you up with an appointment at the hospital so you can get a quick and easy physical.
Okay, fine. I'll let one of those butchers look me over.
You know I'm one of those butchers, right?
I'm not saying you're a butcher.
Okay. Mm,
unless you count what she did to this meal.
You said something earlier that I was struck by, that you are a actor in and a watcher of Black-ish. Mm-hmm. What is the distinction?
They're just two different things. I do actually watch the show, and I like the show. I just think it's a really funny show. And sometimes I'm really tickled and proud, not as me on the show, but that a show like our show exists, and that there's a show on TV that's unpacking these kinds of things and unpacking them with love and with humor and with an open-heartedness, and that we're not attempting to answer a lot of these questions, but instead pose them. And that we get to see all these very different points of view, and it's all in this, in the arms of an embrace on our show, which I think we need more of in our world right now.
Coming up, more from Tracy Ellis Ross. She discusses the departure of Black-ish creator Kenya Barris. And later on the show, we'll meet the choreographer who makes James Corden and friends go dancing in the street. Now let's get back to my interview with Tracy Ellis Ross, who plays Rainbow Johnson in the ABC series Black-ish. As she gears up for season 5, Ross and the cast are already dealing with a couple of unexpected developments. An allegation of sexual assault against the show's co-star Anthony Anderson came out last month. The case is being reviewed by the LA District Attorney. And show creator Kenya Barris has departed ABC for Netflix, although he is still listed as an executive producer on Black-ish. We pick up the conversation with Ross about how she thinks the series will fare without Barris.
Well, we are only 2 episodes in, but I will tell you, you know, last season, like by 4th season, your executive producer is not always like hands on in right. on the floor and with you. First season, second season, third season, he was on the floor. We saw him all the time. I think it's a gradual transition, but it's also a normal transition. I think it came about in a very public and uncomfortable way. So there's a lot more attention on it that way. But I mean, Shonda Rhimes can't be hands-on on her 17 million shows that she does.
Like, I thought it was only 16 million.
I think it's up to 17 million now. You know, so I think there's a way that these things naturally evolve and progress. But what he established is present. The tone of our show, that writer's room and sort of how it works and all of that. He established something that is now in our bones and in our DNA. whether we like it or not, it's there. You know, we have a home base to go to in terms of what we know is Bo, what we know is Dre, what the dynamics of our show are. And he's around if we need to call him.
This past season, you directed an episode about the difficulties in your character's marriage. It's called 53%, mm-hmm. a reference to divorce statistics. And there's a scene I want to play. It's between you and Anthony Anderson. And you've been instructed by a couple's therapist to have a date night. And as soon as you order dinner, which is its own kind of ordeal, the date night goes downhill pretty fast. Let's listen to what happens.
Mm-hmm. You look nice.
You don't have to do that.
No, I mean it, babe. You look nice.
Thank you. It's actually really nice to hear.
Actually? I compliment you all the time.
Okay, Dre.
You say that like I don't compliment you. Babe, I compliment you.
Okay.
More than you compliment me.
That's why I said okay, Dre.
Uh-huh.
Because no matter what I said, you would turn it into a big deal because you turn everything into a big deal.
And how quickly the threads pull apart.
Based on one word, actually. I mean, I think this is very realistic. This is a conversation that I've had in my marriage,
yeah.
a conversation a lot of people have probably had in their marriages. How do you approach, because you directed this, getting that right, because obviously you're telling jokes, you're making fun, but you are trying to make sure that what you're representing in a fictional family is something that real people can understand as being something that could have and maybe actually did happen in their own lives.
You know, the role as a director obviously is very different than the role as an actor, but on our show, we have very well-written material. So that is a number one. Number two, if I may speak as the director, not as the actor, we have really—
Do you speak to your actors that way? You do the kind of the fake English accent? Do you
Yes. As the director, I can say that we have wonderful actors on our show. So tweaking and finding reality in a performance was not and is not the hard part when you come in as a director on our show. For me, the challenging part with this episode is it was the beginning of a 4-episode arc and we were doing something we hadn't done before. Usually the whatever we're diving into is outside of the relationship
right.
and the core of the show is our love and enjoying of each other. And that is what was pulling apart in the episode that I directed. And it was the beginning of it. So it was that like awkward weirdness. So for me, it was really finding what was the awkward thing and how do we find the balance of not making it a full out fight or a full out disconnect, but that sort of in between awkward place between Dre and Bo. And so that took a little bit of it just took some real conversation with Anthony and I both, and then we would try and find it in the scene.
What do you hope the show can say more of? I mean, I think Kenya said that he felt last season the show really became what he wanted it to be.
Oh, good.
Do you think?
I've never heard him say that. I'm happy to hear that.
No, he said,
I think we achieved that in second season. But, but I don't
maybe
know
it's a work in progress. What do you think else can be? Where do you see it going? And what gets you excited about the stories that are left to be told?
I think there's a lot left to be told. I think there's some wonderful exploration to happen with the kids. They're such wonderful actors. And watching them kind of take on story. And, you know, the thing I talked to the producers about before we started back this season was in the beginning, Bo and Dre and this family were people that sort of were figments of someone's imagination, you know, and they could kind of dream them up in the writer's room. But now, to a certain extent, they're people. Like Bo and Dre have their own history that we've all evidenced on screen. So some of the story is now coming out of not who they imagined them to be, but who they actually have become. And it's fantastic. You know, I think it was based on Kenya and his wife, but Bo Johnson is not Bo Barris. They are two very different people at this point, both from the way I've played her and the way she interacts with Dre. So I think there's a ton to explore.
We're talking with Tracy Ellis Ross about Black-ish. One of the things that the show does is it takes an issue and it has people looking at that issue and debating that issue.
Yeah.
And it can be really serious issues.
Yeah.
It can be something like kneeling during the national anthem. It could be about Juneteenth, the day that we recognize the abolition of slavery. And Kenya, as a show creator, has strong ideas about what he wants the show to be. So how would you describe...
Well, I'm gonna stop you first to say that you said an episode about kneeling. That is everyone's impression that that's what the episode was about.
Protest? I mean, what would you say?
Not mine to answer.
Okay.
But you said it as if it were fact, and I just want to
dispute
that.
I think that's fair.
Mm-hmm. So yes, we did a Juneteenth episode. There's been a gun control episode.
Right.
There's been a police brutality episode.
Spanking episode.
There's been a spanking episode. These are not, if you line them up, you don't think, well, that's a funny show. But yes, the stories that we tell that could be considered controversial, but the way we handle them are not controversial. We do them within the embrace of an open heart. So now to your question, now that I cut you off.
No, it's okay. No, it's a good point. I think Kenya is an advocate for the show. And I think every producer is an advocate for the show. But what he's advocating is sometimes a little bit different from what other showrunners are doing. It's like, this is a story that needs to be told, and it may be difficult for you all, but we have to do it. The network is like, that
mostly not.
Okay.
I mean, no, you see all the episodes that have been on the air. I think our network has been extremely supportive. The specifics of what happened around that quote unquote supposed kneeling episode, honestly, I have stayed out of it. It is obviously a lot went down, but my take on it has really been, I don't know how constructive or helpful or useful it is for me to have information that perhaps might upset me. That I really can't do anything about.
Okay.
Is kind of how I feel about that. We all know that I have quite a big mouth in terms of speaking up for things that I, for justice and for freedom and for equality and for women's rights and equal pay. And I have a courage about how I speak up. This is not one for me to speak up on. I don't have enough information.
This show has been, from the very beginning, very good about depicting women in positive ways.
Mm.
How important is it to you that Black-ish gets that right and that it hires women behind the camera, in front of the camera, and tells stories that are relevant and truthful to the female experience?
Well, I mean, let's be clear. Our show is told through Dre's eyes. This is not Bo's story. She kind of acts like a guide to a certain extent. But what I have done, because these are things that are very important to me, is I have really made it my mission to make sure that Bo is fully represented. And I question a lot, and I push back in places that I see things that someone else might not have seen. Sometimes they're small, like, why am I carrying laundry? Sometimes they're big, like, what am I just playing ping pong right here, just sitting in between because I got dressed and put makeup on? Like, what's my point of view in the scene? And if that's pointed out to them and it's something that hasn't been noticed, it's fixed, you know? So I think Bo represents something very strong. She is not wife wallpaper on a show that is traditional in its makeup, in that it is told through the male's eyes. She is still a very full woman that you can tell has a life off screen.
I have to ask you one last difficult question. That's about Anthony Anderson.
Uh-huh.
Is there anything you can say about him? Because he's being investigated for a report about sexual harassment.
I don't know if I have anything to say there.
Okay.
It's upsetting to me. Yeah. It's all very upsetting.
Thank you. Tracy, thanks for coming in.
Yeah. Thanks.
Coming up on The Frame, we'll meet the woman who choreographs James Corden's late-night dance numbers in those crazy crosswalk musicals.
KBCC podcasts are supported by National Geographic's Genius Picasso, starring Antonio Banderas in his Emmy-nominated role as Spanish painter Pablo Picasso, one of the most influential and celebrated artists of the 20th century. Antonio and Picasso both hail from the same hometown, Malaga, Spain, where the production spent several days filming, including in the same house where Picasso was born. Nominated for 7 Emmys, including Outstanding Limited Series. Visit natgeotv.com/FYC for more information.
And the HBO drama Westworld, Time proclaims it's one of the biggest shows on Earth. Live without limits in a world where every human appetite can be indulged. In this hit series, a group of android hosts deviate from their programmers' carefully planned scripts in a disturbing pattern of aberrant behavior. Chaos takes control in the second season of Westworld. For your consideration, nominated for 21 Emmys, including Outstanding Drama Series.
Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. Now a conversation about a lesser-known Emmy category, Outstanding Choreography. Chloe Arnold scored a nomination for her work on The Late Late Show with James Corden, specifically the Crosswalk the Musical segment that she choreographed for Hugh Jackman, Zendaya, and Zac Efron, the stars of the movie The Greatest Showman. If you haven't seen the Crosswalk the Musical segments, they are full-on song and dance numbers that take place in a real crosswalk during the time that the walk sign is on, which, of course, isn't very long. Here's the Crosswalk musical version of Hair with special guest Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Give me down there, hair, shoulder, length, along the hair, baby, there, mama, everywhere, daddy, daddy, hair.
Arnold danced all her life, but she actually studied film at Columbia University. When I spoke with her, she explained why.
What made dance accessible to me growing up in Washington, D.C. with limited resources was television and film. You know, these are things that are just more financially accessible. You spent back then, you know, $6 on a movie versus going to a theater production where you're going to spend, you know,
60.
Exactly.
If you're lucky.
Exactly. Right. So for me, film and television were incredibly accessible, and that's what inspired me to want to be able to dance and know that it could be a career. So for me, I always had dreams from when I was really little. I saw the movie Tap with Gregory Hines, and I thought, this is what I want to do one day. I want to put dance on film. And then I saw Debbie Allen in Fame. And so between the two of them, I thought, I've got to learn how. How do I put dance on film and on television?
What was your first job with Late Late Show with James Corden, and how would you describe your creative partnership with him and the showrunners about how you come up with various dances within that format? Because late night, not usual to see a lot of dancing.
I know. It's absolutely amazing how much dance they put on late night. I mean, I think I'm on my 35th episode with them, which is so much dance on TV. My first episode was with James Corden and Meghan Trainor, and they were doing a satire about New Year's resolutions.
Hey. Yeah, it's pretty clear. I ain't no size 2, but I just joined the gym like I'm supposed to do. Cause I got that boom boom, I'm walking up the staircase, all the wrong junk in all the wrong place.
I got the call the night before, and we had to shoot that next day. So I got on the phone immediately.
You have no choreography, no rehearsals.
And no cast.
Right.
Okay, yes.
Okay.
So I call one of my closest friends who I've known for about 18 years. And she is a phenomenal hip-hop dancer. And she's toured with Justin Timberlake and Britney Spears. And she's just wonderful. So I called her and I immediately said, Ava, I need you. Are you free tomorrow? She said, yes. I said, whew. All right, one down. So I hired her. Then we got three more hip-hop dancers on board. Okay, great. Now, that night, I get the music. So I'm at home, you know, in front of my mirror at home, making up dances. And then the next day, we get into the studio. We were there for 2 hours, 10 to noon, at my studio rehearsing. Then we went to the lot, showed the producers, got it approved. Whew. And just like that, we were shooting. And thank God it went really well. So now we've done...
Now you've done all these things.
Yeah.
When you think about Crosswalk the Musical, you have a conceit, which is basically you're going to stage a show in a crosswalk. And generally, it's at Beverly and Genesee near his studios.
The Crosswalk Ensemble isn't so much a theater company as it is a collective of cultural revolutionaries. And with this kind of platform, I never think, oh, what show do I want to do? Because that's egotistical, that's selfish. No, I look at the world and I ask, what does humanity need from me right now? And then I see what's got the biggest part for me.
Do you work backward from how much time and space you have in the crosswalk. Obviously, you have multiple takes, but you do have to clear out or the police and every motorist is going to get very upset.
Usually I get, these are the musicals we're going to do. Starts there. So when I get the musicals, that helps me figure out what the best casting is based around, like, well, what genre are we doing? Are we doing The Lion King or are we doing Sound of Music? These are, you know, just different.
Remember, if a car hits you, the show goes on, all right? So you roll and you sing. You roll and you sing.
The songs have been cut down to the exact amount of time that the crosswalk is. So,
which is what? Typically 20?
30 seconds. 30 seconds, maximum 45.
Okay.
So.
And that means you have time to run out, placing props.
Exactly.
Or furniture. And then.
Yes. And you have to decide, is this a preset?
Right.
Where the music, you know, you set everything, music starts, or is the music going and everybody's running and props land, have to land on time. So then we do like time trials, basically, where once I've set the dance and it's approved by producers and showrunners, then that's where we decide who, how, and what, and where are these props going to get on in time. And then we time how long it takes them to get off. And then we decide what stays and what goes in order to meet the limits. Because in real life, this, though there are police there to oversee and to protect it all, it's still very real. We're not closing the street down. This is in real time.
That was great, guys. Yeah. Did you hear those car horns? That's a standing ovation.
This show is incredible because it's truly the example of teamwork makes the dream work.
Right.
Because if one person is off, it throws off the whole puzzle, because this is really a puzzle. And I think one of the hardest things is that once James steps in, you want to laugh at everything, but what makes what we're doing funny is that we take it very seriously. So I always have to tell the dancers, you approach the crosswalk like this is Broadway. Like this is the best thing you've ever done in your life. And that's what makes it so funny, because people that are driving by are like, why is there a full-blown production?
Yeah, there's no winking and nodding.
Yeah.
You're doing it for real.
Yeah. So while we're not laughing, we hope everybody's laughing at home.
That was Emmy-nominated choreographer Chloe Arnold. You can see her work on The Late Late Show with James Corden on CBS. And that'll do it for today. I'm John Horn. Thanks for listening. We're back here tomorrow.